This is The Takeaway. I'm John Hockenberry. Thanks for listening on this Independence Day, everyone. Hope it's a happy one for you. Hope you're free to enjoy this holiday. Freedom is the theme of this hour and this day. Freedom, a concept relatively unknown to the world of 1776, extracted from the political writings of philosophers and revolutionaries, combined with the outrage over the rule of King George, an angry declaration of independence from the British crown, and the world was left to figure out this thing called freedom, liberty, an inalienable right, we were told. All this hour, conversations on freedom and independence from earlier this year. What does the yearning for freedom feel like from a cell on death row? We'll hear the story of a man wrongly convicted of murder he didn't commit, and how DNA evidence is what set him free. The constitutional freedom to own a gun, how political controversy over gun violence in America sometimes makes this a freedom best expressed in private. Plus, freedom concrete, not abstract. How is political freedom increasingly understood to be dependent on access to affordable health care? We'll talk about that. And finally, Eric Schmidt of Google will take us on a tour of the free open source world of the Internet, and we'll explore some of its more restrictive alternatives. But we begin with this.
God bless America, land that I love.
You know, if you're an American, you either love this song,
God bless America,
or you hate this song.
From the sea.
You have to admit, this patriotic song supports a wide range of styles. From Kate Smith belting out a show tune back in 1938, to Whitney Houston warming up the crowd at a boxing match in the year 2000, to the Mormon Tabernacle Choir showcasing the churchiness of this song, its evolutions and deep history is a story told by Cheryl Kaskowitz, author of God Bless America, The Surprising History of an Iconic Song. The book hits stores today on July 4th. And as Cheryl explains, the song's unexpected rise to patriotic anthem is a scenario that Irving Berlin certainly couldn't have imagined when he wrote the song right after World War I.
It's very interesting to think about the context in 1938, where Irving Berlin was himself a Jewish immigrant and was writing a song invoking God. At the time, it was used as a symbol for religious tolerance, and especially in the wake of, you know, the growing violence in Europe by the Nazis. And it actually started out as a peace song. And originally, there was a line, an original line that was, "Let us all be grateful that we're far from there." And so it really positioned the song specifically as a move away from war, which I think from our perspective now, the way that the song is used in support of American war, that I think it's really interesting that it had this beginning of very much a stance away from war that switched very quickly and kind of tracked public opinion as it moved more towards interventionism. The song actually debuted the day after Kristallnacht, which began November 9th. And the song debuted November 10th, the eve of Armistice Day in 1938.
But it began as a show tune, pretty much.
Right, exactly. So Irving Berlin, the great songwriter of the 20th century, wrote the song in 1918 during World War I. He was drafted and serving as an army private at a camp in upstate New York. And they asked him to write a fundraising review, a musical. And so he originally wrote God Bless America as the finale to that show, which was an all-soldier show. But at the time, decided not to include it. And it sat in this mythical trunk of rejected songs until 1938.
And if we can think about World War I and what it must have been like for an army private, and what was going on in Europe was so horrific. In some ways, the idea, God bless America, is a sort of a, thank God we're not in Europe. It's almost a toss-off idea that becomes something much, much bigger by the time we get to 1938. Why was it pulled out of the trunk?
Well, Kate Smith was a radio star, and she approached Irving Berlin looking for a song to sing for her Armistice Day radio show. And so the story goes that he thought of God Bless America and pulled it out at that point.
And then, of course, Irving Berlin performs on the Ed Sullivan Show. He's
yes.
sort of trotted out to sing the song and to perform the song, you know, at various times during the 60s, including with President Nixon.
God bless America, land that I love.
At that point, what does the song begin to mean?
During the Vietnam War, the song was really taken up as a song in support of the administration and in support of the Vietnam War, and really as a kind of anthem for the status quo. I see God Bless America in the 1960s as a kind of counter-protest anthem to quiet dissent. And it really didn't
happen. In many ways, the message has changed from, here are our values, God bless America, we have something to contribute to the world. It's become, hey, God is on our side. Stop criticizing us for what we're doing in Vietnam.
Yes, exactly. And I think that it was really in the 1960s and part of the upheaval of the Vietnam War and, you know, the rest of the social change movements that were going on in the 1960s that maybe solidified a little bit its meaning that's more, let's leave it alone. Though I should say, from the very beginning, in 1940, Woody Guthrie was not a fan of God Bless America, and he actually wrote This Land Is Your Land as a kind of protest against it.
In the shadow of the steeple, by the relief office, I saw my people as they stood there hungry. I stood there wondering, is this land made for you and me?
The Depression was still going on. There was a lot of struggle in the U.S. at that time that he felt like the song was glossing over. And so the original refrain for This Land Was Made for You and Me was, God blessed America for me.
Hmm. You've also got Bob Dylan writing With God on Our Side, this extremely ironic protest song that evokes a lot of the same notions of God Bless America, but in a very negative, nasty tone.
Oh, my name, it ain't nothing. My age, it means less. The country I come from is called the Midwest. I was taught and brought up there, the laws to abide, and that the land that I live in has God on its side.
There wasn't a whole lot of space for the left to claim the message of God Bless America by the 1960s. They didn't feel there was a lot to be proud of in America's conduct abroad. And, you know, there was a lot of reflection. And so a song that so confidently stated, you know, a love of country didn't feel appropriate at that time for them. And it was, the song was increasingly claimed and used as an anthem by the Christian right, which was coming up in the late 1960s and 70s and sort of peaked with Reagan.
Well, we're talking with Cheryl Kaskowitz, whose book God Bless America is about the song God Bless America, but it's also about this transformation of the notion of patriotism told through this song, its shifting context, and the other songs that go along with it. One of the criticisms that we constantly hear about the national anthem, the Star Spangled Banner, is that it's difficult to sing, in contrast to God Bless America, which is not very difficult to sing, and the lyrics are not difficult to understand in any sense. They don't require a knowledge of the War of 1812. But on September 11th, and in the period right after it, those factors, plus all of the emotional energy of September 11th, really came together to transform the song once again. You talk about the celebrated performance of God Bless America by Diana Ross at Shea Stadium on the 21st of September in 2001.
God bless America. Land, 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 land.
How do you see that?
Right. For that first game, that was the first game back in New York after September 11th. And they put a lot of thought into how to structure it, what people would need. Obviously, it was a big gathering, so there was a time, it was a context for both mourning and for celebration and to come back. And Liza Minnelli sang New York, New York with firefighters, and Diana Ross sang God Bless America in a way that the song just had already taken on new meaning after the attacks.
In a few years, this song will be 100 years old. It will have spanned a century. It will have had many identity changes during that period of time. Do you think it's settled down, that it's going to pretty much reflect the identity that it has now forever? And I wonder what Irving Berlin would have made of all this.
I don't think that it's going to settle down. I think that it just continues to shift. Irving Berlin says that for him, the song was always about thanks to a country from an immigrant who had made good. That's where it came from for him. And I think many people have different associations with it, and it's hard to pin down. But there is something charged about it and powerful. And so whether you love it or can't stand it, it's accrued these meanings over time.
Well, quite a legacy for a simple, almost tossed away show tune by Irving Berlin. Cheryl Kaskowitz, thanks so much.
Thank you so much for having me.
On Notes from America, we have conversations with people across the country about how we can truly become the nation that we claim to be. Each week, we talk about race, our politics, education, relationships, usually all of them, because everything's connected. And you, our listeners, are at the center of those conversations. I'm Kai Wright. Join me on Notes from America, wherever you get your podcasts.